Welcome to Campfire Stories with your co-hosts, Salesforce MVP Stacy Cogswell and public speaker Justice Sikakani Sr., a podcast for sharing stories of Salesforce trailblazers.
Welcome to the Campfires podcast with your co-host, Stacy Cogswell, Salesforce MVP, and yours truly. Today we have Ashley Allen, founder of IT Equality, here on the podcast with us to share some good dialogue for you listeners out there. Ashley, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. I was telling Ashley before we started the recording that she is our first guest of season two, I guess, if you're counting our years and seasons. Right? Because we, you know, we did all of our episodes through 2018, and then we started the year with our recap, right, where we invited all of our guests back.
2019 guest, but,
yep. But Ashley's our first new guest this year.
Wow. How do you feel about that, Ashley?
I am very honored. I'm super happy to be here and just talk with you all and hear more about you. And I'm excited.
Good, good, good. So for those listening, we ended up having a pretty good dialogue before we even commenced the podcast. So goes to show that Ashley's got a lot of good things to share for us. And let's just jump right in. So Ashley, tell us something. I don't know. Just tell us about you. Tell us something that's exciting. Tell us something that's new. Tell us what season you're in, what you're doing. Just give the listeners kind of a feel.
Oh my goodness. That answer all 25 of those
listen,
questions.
I'm
right
a
now,
very
actually.
Listen. I'm gonna I'm a very in one. Stacy knows this about me. I'm gonna throw like 20 questions and expect 20 responses.
Well, today I went on a field trip with our middle daughter. We have three daughters, myself and my partner Miranda. We've got three girls, and so today was a field trip whale watching, and that was really, really amazing. Fortunately, since I run IT Equality, I can take the day off without needing to ask for PTO. I just have to make up the hours eventually, but having that freedom, especially because we do Salesforce. And so because it's cloud-based, you know, I can make up at 8 o'clock at night and I can play catch up on the weekend, and I'm not really subject to any sort of 9-to-5 restrictions. And so that was really fun just today. But
that's awesome. And you're on the California coast.
Yes.
I'm on the exact opposite end of the country as you, in North Carolina on the East Coast. And then Justice is up north, kind of in the middle of the country. So we're kind of spanning the entire United States right now.
Yeah, we're all over the map.
Yeah. So did you see whales?
We did. Yes, we saw whales, dolphins, and sea lions. And then they went to the tide pools and saw some sea anemones and little hermit crabs and all different sorts of stuff. It was a whole day event.
That's cool.
So you were chaperoning?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. So I got to chaperone. That's pretty dope. I got to chaperone for the first time for my son, Ashley, and it was at the like an Ordway, you know, where they play all the musical instruments, like the very big ones that are like, you know, human size.
Wow.
Clearly, I don't know what I'm talking about. But nonetheless, we had to chaperone. It was kind of a fun experience. So is this your first time chaperoning?
Oh, no, no. We have a 12-year-old, okay. And so we've done plenty of chaperoning. We chaperone at the Getty Museum in Los Angeles, and we've chaperoned for other field trips. The last one just slipping my mind at the moment, but there was one with our 12-year-old, and then all of the kids go on different field trips, and so this is something I'm familiar with.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. You two are both very active parents. Justice, I know you're out and about with your kiddos all the time.
Yeah, no, I try to listen. As a father of Well, as a father and being divorced with two kids, you just, so the way we have it set up is, my ex-wife will have the kids throughout the week. I'll have the kids on the weekends. There are some days where I have them throughout the week. But, you try to be as present as possible and you try to show your kids as many things going on in life. So, yeah, I overly try to do things with them, Stacey, mm-hmm. just so that they have those kind of experiences to recollect on versus, hey, we just sat and binged Netflix all weekend. You know what I mean?
Right, right, yeah.
You really cherish those moments. But it sounds like, Ashley, you and your partner Miranda are trucking away there. You guys are chaperoning and making it happen and running businesses.
I'm going to tell you guys, I'm coming up on the tail end of childhood. My son will be 18 in May. And so coming up on the end of the parenting journey, and I know you parent them for a lifetime and all that, but coming up on the end of it now, it really is these memories. Like, I remember trips to the zoo, trips to the aquarium. My mom, when Logan was very little, my mom flew us to, she had some tickets from a trip she wasn't able to go on. And so she cashed them in to take us to San Diego just to take Logan to the zoo for the weekend and then back. And, but those are the memories. Logan's first time in New York City, and he was a teenager and he was a shoe buff. And so, just going through like the Adidas store and stuff. Those are the best moments, to look back on. And so we're planning to kind of go out with a bang and for his 18th birthday this May, instead of having a party or whatever, we're actually going to the Caribbean. We're going to go spend a week in the Virgin Islands together. So that'll be fun, but building some more of those memories while it's still, just the two of us.
Quick random thought. That's phenomenal, Stacey. Quick random thought. I've never said this to Stacey, by the way, but it continues to blow my mind every time you're like, I have an 18-year-old son, Stace, because you don't even look like you're 30.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'll tell you, I have had people make that comment. And depending on the mood I'm in, sometimes I will take it as a compliment and say thank you. And other times I will say, well, that's what happens when you get started early with parenthood, but which is totally not even true. I'll actually be 40 later this year. So there's my cards on the table.
Unreal.
But I really, really credit it to getting rid of the negativity in my life, getting rid of drama. Happiness does wonderful things for your physical health, for your mental health, for just you as a person. So I appreciate the compliment, Justice, and I absolutely attribute it to genuine happiness.
I agree with you completely. I think being happy and just letting yourself be happy, it's the best thing that you could possibly do for yourself. On that topic, I came out of the closet as lesbian after 10 years of being in the closet. And so I too have a divorce and an ex. And for me, coming out of the closet was a really difficult decision because I had that choice of, I can either choose to continue pretending that I'm straight or I can choose to live more authentically. And then you've got a lot of people saying that, being gay is a choice in and of itself. And I don't believe that at all. Choosing to be gay or not is not something that exists, but choosing to be in the closet is a choice. And so since coming out of the closet, I have been just worlds happier than I was. Like, the depression that I had when I was in the closet, I still struggle with things from time to time like anybody else would, but it's completely different. Coming out of the closet really, really changed my life for the better.
That is amazing, Ashley. So one, thank you for even sharing that. It's definitely an interesting conversational topic in recent weeks, months, and even in recent years around mental health And, you know, we've seen a lot of suicides. We've seen a lot of unfortunate occurrences that have been a result of individuals feeling like they couldn't be their full authentic selves, right? I'm watching One Tree Hill all mm-hmm. over again. So for those of you that know what One Tree Hill is, older TV series, but in one of the episodes, there's this character that absolutely, actually, this is a true story, that commits suicide because he couldn't be his full authentic self. And then people come to appreciate him after he's gone, you know? So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So 10 years of being in the closet, if you will, we'll use that analogy. Did you feel, career-wise, being a mother, being a friend, that there was always this kind of like cloud over you in terms, even on your best days, you still felt like you weren't 100% Ashley?
Oh, absolutely. And for me, it was a really long journey of being in the closet because I knew that I liked other girls when I was 13 and I was the only lesbian that I knew. And so that was extremely isolating because all of my friends who were girls had an interest in boys and I was the only one who had an interest in girls. And so I started out in the closet pretty early, just trying to get along with other girls, like, oh yeah, he's cute. And I, you know, wanted to fit in. I really needed that sense of belonging with my friends because home life was a whole nother situation of, I really didn't have a lot of support from my parents as a kid. So that was tough. And then I was bullied throughout high school. I was severely bullied. I don't know. Do you swear on this podcast? Is it censored?
I don't say that's on you. I mean,
you absolutely you can say whatever you want to say. I mean, okay. This is going to be public. So whatever
I
you
had, want to I had keep people out there. I had people look me in the face when I was in high school. And with this look of hate, they would look me in the eyes and say, fucking dyke. And that resonated through me to the point where these were complete strangers. They didn't know me. And they're over here saying these horrible things to me for not even knowing me. I mean, and so with that level of kids that were bullying me, I was beat up. I was really seriously bullied and depressed. Not only was I in the closet and that was difficult, but I also had this sense of not belonging from a really young age that carried into the work life that I had. And so, yeah, even on my best days, I still felt like people still didn't like me. And a lot of that was sort of maybe psychological damage from having been bullied so much as a kid, but I felt like I didn't fit in and nothing I did would fit in. But somewhere along the lines of being in the closet for so long, I stopped realizing that I was lesbian. Like, I wouldn't look in the mirror and say to myself, today's a great day to be gay. I would just go about my normal life, avoid the mirrors, not look at in the mirror, not really, you know, it was more, how can I fit in? How can I hide? Like, what clothes can I wear so that people aren't going to look at me and know or find out? And so I had this, it was almost like a fictitious world that I lived in that was this, oh, straight women are supposed to do this and straight women are supposed to do this. And if I can just check off all the boxes, you know, I can be straight enough to where people will actually accept me. And that was living that kind of life was so, so damaging that eventually, you know, it really came to a boiling point where I was so seriously depressed that my best friend started telling me, you know, Ashley, you need to come out of the closet. It wasn't until I had somebody telling me on a regular basis, you know, look, like you can't keep living like this. Like, this isn't living. I was crying on a daily basis. Every lunch we would go out to lunch, I would cry. I would go back to my desk and clean myself up and put myself back together. But, you know, it got to the point where I really, it was almost like the choice was made for me.
Wow. You know, that as you were explaining that, a name came to mind, Ashley. Her name is Jana Shortell. She's a Care 11 co-anchor out here in the Twin Cities. And about a year ago, my daughter, went viral for this whole thing with Maya Moore. Jana Shortell was one of the anchors from a local news station that interviewed my daughter. And she's a woman, and she's a lesbian. And her appearance is more, I'm going to share the link with you guys later, but CNN did a documentary on her. Her appearance is more of that of what society would say this is how a male depicts themselves. So CNN just released this story called A Great Big Story or something like that. And Jana Shortell just kind of walks through how for so many years she couldn't be her full self in her professional career because she would go to her stylist and do certain hairstyles for when she was at work, and then certain hairstyles. She has a very distinct look, and certain hairstyles while she was with her friends. And her hairstylist was actually quoted in saying that it became overwhelming. She was Team Jana, mm-hmm. obviously, but she said it became overwhelming because it was like having two clients. And Jana Shortell now, if you look at her, you just Google her, she is well-respected. And she said, I didn't know how the community would receive me, the business community, that is. But she's more praised because she is herself than trying to keep up with the Joneses, if you will. So there's a lot of parallels I'm just hearing in just how you're speaking and how you've come to the revelation of where you're at today. And you can always hear when somebody's authentically just being themselves. And I could hear that, you know, in how you're just explaining to us your experiences. And it sounds like it's been a journey, but I'm glad you've gotten to a point now where you're just, you know, you're just, you're you.
Yeah.
To be quite frank.
Yeah, it feels really good to not be two completely different people on the daily. I remember I was going out for lunch with my team before I came out of the closet, and one of my coworkers said, oh, I'm the same person when I walk in the door and I sit down at work as when I go home and I'm having dinner with my family, and when I'm out with my friends, I'm always me. And I thought that was this amazing unicorn fantasy thing that anybody could be the same person in all of those different settings, because I was so just night and day, like you just said. When I went to work, I acted a certain way. When I was with my, at the time, in-laws, I acted a certain way. And when I was just by myself, I acted completely different. The clothes that I wore, the way that I dressed, you know, I would wear earrings and jewelry to work. I would not ever wear jewelry around the house. I don't like jewelry. I don't wear it today. I have an Apple Watch. It's the only thing I wear as far as jewelry. But I wore typically, I guess, mostly men's clothes around the house. Like, I'm most comfortable wearing like guys' pants and baseball t-shirts and stuff. And that didn't really translate to corporate America very well. And so that's something where I would go to work looking like a businesswoman with the skirts and the blouses and the, you know, makeup or whatever. And then I would go home and I would wear like Doc Martens and a pair of Dickies and look completely different.
Right. But you're comfortable though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was, you know, now I'm the same person regardless. I have slightly nicer men's clothes that I wear. I think if you weren't paying attention, it probably would just look like I was just wearing regular clothes. Like, I don't know why certain clothes have to be genderized in that way, but, I wear the same clothes. It's more of a matter of, am I going somewhere nice or am I not going somewhere nice, as opposed to, do I need to look straight today or can I just be me?
Yeah, no, that's. Yeah, that's, you know, the clothes that you wear in a lot of different ways should be representative of who you are as an individual, but shouldn't necessarily define you and or your trajectory. You know what I mean? So like, if I'm coming into work, I get it. You know, I can't just come into work naked. That as an adult makes sense, but I shouldn't have to necessarily feel like in order to get to a certain level in my career, a certain level of success, I have to be this particular image. Like if I like to wear, you know, jeans and dress shoes, which is what I'm wearing now with a dress shirt untucked and a blazer, which is what I'm wearing, then that should be my look. I shouldn't have to feel like I got to come in with a three-piece suit every single day to be successful, right?
Yeah. I used to be so frustrated when my son was younger, you know, taking him out shopping and you go to these children's clothing stores. And it I'm sure it's frustrating for parents of both genders that the clothing selection for boys was like one quarter of the store, and then there's all this stuff for girls. You know, girls can wear shorts or capris or skirts or dresses or jumpers. Like, they get all these different options. And for boys, it's you wear these big baggy shorts or jeans. You get the colors of blue, green, brown, or black, and you can have dirty mud trucks, pirates, or dinosaurs. That's the box that we put the kids in. And then the girls, it's you got to wear bright colors, and it's got to be smileys and sparkles and glitter. And that's fine. Like, when I was growing up, my entire room was decorated in pink. That was my favorite color. And so that's fine if that's what you prefer. But the fact that I have said forever that I would love to see a children's clothing store that is not designated by gender, that it's just, here's clothes of all colors and lengths and sizes, and just pick out what you want, you know, wear what you want. Like, I don't know, but like the fact that we put people in these boxes from so very early, and we're like, these are your only options. Choose just from this box. It's frustrating, especially as we become more enlightened as a society. And obviously it takes time, and we're not advancing here as fast as we should. But, you know, as we see these things, but it takes time for stores, for media, for, you know, commercials, for government forms, whatever, to catch up and to understand what reality actually is, you know?
I do feel that there is a shift. You're absolutely right, Stacey. I do feel that there is a shift happening, and we're seeing it. And a lot of it's positive. Some of it's negative. You know, we've seen some of the things happening in New York with legislation being passed around gender identification and that sort of thing at birth. And you know, so, you know, the landscape in terms of how we interact with you know, bodies of people that self-identify differently, it's become more of a conversational topic in recent years than it has in the last century, in my opinion. What is interesting is, you're right. I think as we grow up, society kind of bakes in this narrative of this is how you're supposed to perceive things subconsciously. You don't even realize it, right? And becoming a father the first time with my son was, you know, it was prescriptive. Like, I kind of knew what my role was based on what society had controlled me to learn and experience throughout my life. When I became a father the second time with my daughter, things were a little bit different, which was very interesting. And by that, what I mean is this. My approach, not to get too political, but my approach conservatively has always kind of been, things are like very binary, right? Programmatically. Like, that's just how my brain works. That's how I've kind of come up. But being able to go somewhere with my kids together and see that, like, for example, as it relates to sports, that my son has all of these blueprints for how he can be successful here, there, or whatever in the realm of sports, and my daughter has no data points, is alarming. So then it makes you wonder on a broader scale, is there high representation for women being successful in the Oval Office and politics as business leaders? And as a father that wants to see my kids both equally thrive, there just is this huge deficit. So now it makes me kind of wonder, okay, to Ashley's point, if being a lesbian is not quote unquote a choice, and that's just how she feels she was brought up, then it's one of those things of how many people in our society feel like they're being, I don't know, penalized for being themselves because they're misunderstood. I guess I don't really have a question, or I'm just kind of ranting, but that's kind of, you know, I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I definitely have a lot of thoughts throughout a lot of what you just said. I think that people are sort of afraid to be their authentic selves, not just from like an LGBT perspective where, you know, you may be afraid to come out of the closet as gay or lesbian or as transgender, Bisexuality is mostly covered up because if you're half straight, you're basically straight. So, you know, people just assume that bisexuality gets masked completely, and that's a whole nother conversation. But it's not just an LGBT topic. It's so much deeper than that, because even before I came out of the closet as lesbian, I was struggling to come out. You know, it's not the same closet, but it's a different kind of closet, as having anxiety. I've struggled with anxiety and depression for my whole life. And I always wore long sleeves to work because I have self-injury scars. When I was a kid, I was a cutter, and so I self-injured, and that's extremely frowned upon. And I didn't want anyone to find out, because I thought, you know, if anybody sees scars on my arm, they're going to think I'm crazy. They're going to fire me. They're going to think I'm not trustworthy. And so people make their own closets out of being afraid of a huge number of things. You know, if somebody finds out that, you know, I'm poorer than I'm pretending to be, they're going to discriminate against me. Or if somebody finds out that, and there's all these different kinds of closets. And so I think people are afraid for a large number of reasons. I'm glad that New York City, you brought up New York City. I'm really happy that they're being more progressive with their legislature. One thing I know they did recently is to enact protections for LGBT-owned businesses. I happen to be an LGBT-owned business, and so they're trying to have more engagement at the county and state level, where, you know, an LGBT-owned business could bid on a government project, for example, and because they have the LGBT classification, that, you know, there's more protection there. And then also with the non-binary gender markers, that's something I plan to do. California, as of January 1st, has allowed for non-binary gender markers. One of my friends already has the non-binary gender marker.
Can you explain that for maybe some of the listeners that don't know what that is or what that means or what that looks like?
Oh, sure. So people who identify as non-binary or gender fluid or gender non-conforming, there's a whole lot of words for the same thing. It's, in summary, it's you don't identify as 100% female or 100% male. And so in school or back in the day, or you may be familiar with, oh, well, she's a tomboy, you know, she's more of a masculine type of girl. She likes to play soccer and football, and, you know, or you could have a boy, and it's usually more frowned upon, that's a boy that's really feminine. You know, he really likes nail polish. He really likes pink. And, you know, people are kind of made fun of for those different things. That's kind of a lesser extent. Being non-binary means that you truly do not identify as wholly female or male. You identify as somewhere in the middle. And that can be, you know, you were assigned male at birth or you were assigned female at birth, but you act the opposite gender, not to the extent where you are binary in the opposite gender, because that's a whole different topic. That's transgender. So non-binary, it's almost the bisexual of your gender. If you take gender and you say you're somewhere in the middle, then you're non-binary. And so I identify as non-binary. I identify as female for a vast majority of what I do. I'm a mom. I celebrate Mother's Day. I'm a granddaughter. I'm, you know, female identifying in a lot of ways, but I do identify more masculine in other ways. And because of that, I feel more comfortable saying that I'm non-binary, because I don't fit into the, you know, 100% feminine mold, if you will. I feel like I'm more in the middle. So tomboy, but extra.
Wow. That was quite the informative breakdown. I didn't even know, I'll be quite frank with you. So I appreciate.
Oh yeah. That's a big thing about what I do, is I do help people to understand more about gender, and that's sort of a mission of sorts that I have. I mean, myself and my partner, we're lesbian moms, and we try to promote awareness of just gender identity and normalizing LGBT topics, because it's something that's really scary for some people. If, you know, there's a big sense of, oh, I don't want to offend somebody, I don't want to say the wrong thing, I don't want to, that happens a lot. And so it's easier for me to just tell somebody, you know, like, hey, this is me, I'm going to put it all out there. And then if you've got questions, ask me, than to just keep somebody guessing. And that doesn't help.
Yeah, I appreciate your openness. You and Miranda both, that you would be so open in normalizing, I think is a great word. And then obviously educating, because there's people who are ignorant, not because of, not because they want to be, not because they're sticking their head in the sand, but just because they don't know where to go to get the information. And I've heard other people say that, you know, I actually had a conversation with someone at Florida Dreamin' who is gay, and he was just saying that it becomes frustrating sometimes to always be asked these questions, to feel like you are being a representative of an entire group of people. And he was like, I don't want that to be my sole identity. I want to just be me, a person who loves Salesforce and does this and this and this, and who also happens to be gay. And it's like, but I get, you know, everybody wants to ask me questions about, you know, being gay and, you know, transgender and, you know, all these other things. And he's like, I'm so tired of answering the questions. And I totally get that from his perspective. He has an incredibly valid point. But at the same time, sometimes I don't know what to say or what a term means or, you know, whatever. And I don't want to offend, I don't want to misspeak. And, you know, so it's nice to know that there are people who are, such as you and your partner, that are so open and embracing the questions and helping to inform the public. And, you know, it reminds me a lot of why Justice and I even started this podcast, is because we want to hear people's stories. We want to hear what people have to say. We want to help share and give a platform for people to be able to speak and share that.
I think that it goes in waves too, because not every day I wake up and I say to myself, I'm going to educate the world on non-binary topics. I do have days where I'm just like,
every morning.
Yeah. I'm just going to, you know, like women's bathroom, Mother's Day parade. Like, I'm just going to, today is going to be an all girl day because I'm not in the mood to talk about non-binary stuff. And so I think that when one person has just had their limit of, you know, if I have one more gay conversation, I'm going to lose my mind. You know, there's another person that's like, okay, I took a break, I'm ready to get back at it and go back to educating the world. And I think that I've seen that so much since coming out of the closet. I never realized how much of a chore it is on a day in and day out of just having that. And I think for the transgender community, it's especially hard because for them right now with the political climate, they're not allowed to be in the military, or they may not be allowed to be in the military. That's becoming even worse. I've seen discrimination against the transgender community go up tremendously lately. And so I think as far as the LGBT topics go right now, the transgender community is really having a hard time.
You know, you brought something up, actually. Well, both of you brought something up that I thought was very relevant. So I work today for a nonprofit organization, which I'll get into a little bit later, but it's an interesting experience. I've never worked for a nonprofit, so there are a lot of interesting new dynamics that I'm faced with. That said, with those interesting dynamics, there are a lot of new cultural elements here that are new. And what do I mean by that? Let me be more specific. We're a 43-person company, and we have like two or three floors on a building that we have here right on Hennepin Avenue, which actually is like one of the main streets here in downtown Minneapolis. And on our main floor, where all the employees are basically working out of, there's like signs right outside of the men's and women's bathroom. I'm going to paraphrase this, but basically it says, depending upon how you identify, this bathroom is for you, that sort of thing, right? And Stacey mm-hmm. made a really good point, because the way I grew up and kind of how my belief system is, that hasn't been something that has been, I got to think how I want to say this. That hasn't necessarily been something I've been well informed on or truly took the effort to want to mm-hmm. understand. I'm just kind of, this is how it works for me. This is what makes, but this was new for me. I'm just going to be very vulnerable and transparent. So I actually went and asked somebody. I literally went and asked somebody, like, so explain this to me, because there's a sign outside of the male bathroom that says, hey, however you identify, this bathroom's for you. The same thing is occurring with the female restroom. So I just need some understanding of how does that work? Because mm-hmm. then you can interchange the bathrooms, right? But yeah, I don't know. Maybe you could.
Yeah, I can give you a whole lot of information on that. So, I mean, first of all, transgender people, if you're a transgender man, you're a man. You're not a woman pretending to be a man. And if you're a transgender woman, you're a woman. You're not a man pretending to be a woman. You're not a sort of woman. You're not an insulting, derogatory name like he, she. You should never refer to anyone as that. That's a very hurtful term. You would not want to say that to someone. It could be very triggering. There's also confusion about whether you call somebody transgender. That's okay. You can call them trans, as in transgender. That's fine. If you say the word tranny, that is insulting and derogatory and hurtful. You know, there's the word transvestite. That one's sometimes up for debate, but it's also very derogatory. And so, like, the vocabulary that you use around transgender people really can inform people of, you know, how much knowledge you have. Because if you say some hurtful term, they're going to likely assume that, you know, you're either trying to insult them or you're not very well informed. And then if somebody corrects you and they're just like, okay, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm actually a woman and I need you to refer to me as such, the right answer is not to just argue in front of them and say, oh, no, you're not. No, I know that you're not. Like, that is so wrong. And so there's a lot of just like basic, you know, human decency aspects to working with and around people who are transgender. You know, if somebody tells you they're a woman, treat them like any other woman that you have ever met. But when it comes to the bathrooms, people sometimes really start to get all kinds of, you know, oh my goodness, there's a man in the woman's bathroom. Think about how afraid that person would be of everybody else that's in the bathroom. Like, Justice, you're a man. As a man, if you walked into the woman's bathroom, how awkward mm-hmm. and uncomfortable would that be for you?
Mm-hmm. Like, exactly.
I'm assuming that it would be, you would feel out of place, right? And so if a transgender woman walks into the woman's bathroom and somebody calls her out and says, oh, you don't belong here, that's going to be hurtful and scary. And I have transgender friends who have been in the woman's bathroom and they've been assaulted. They've been threatened. They've been harassed. Transgender people are at the largest risk being in the bathroom that some people feel doesn't belong to them. Like, I can't imagine a transgender person. They just want to get into the bathroom and get out of the bathroom as fast as possible. And the same thing goes with the men's room. If there's a transgender man in the men's room, I mean, there's a risk of everything. Like, if you know, think of your worst case scenario of there's some, I don't know, a truck stop, not to pick on truck stops, but and a transgender man goes into a bathroom at a truck stop and somebody thinks that that man is actually a woman, like the amount of abuse and risk that is there for that transgender man, it's far surpasses the risk that the transgender man poses to the other people in the men's bathroom. Like, people think of it in terms of, oh my goodness, there's predators in the bathroom, but I don't see it that way at all. It's just somebody wants to get in and out of the bathroom as fast as possible. And then on the flip side, I've had transgender friends. One transgender woman friend of mine was sort of at a point where she thought to herself, oh, well, you know, I look more masculine today. Maybe I should just go to the men's bathroom. But then again, she also looks like a woman. And so she's got the same risk of if I go to the men's bathroom, because people might think I'm a man, they also might think that I'm a woman. And so there's no bathroom for you in that case. And you've got to go to one or the other, unless they have gender neutral bathrooms, yeah, which is becoming more common. But it's like, what are you supposed to do in that situation? You've got to pick one or the other. And no matter which bathroom you choose, you're up against, you know, some serious, you know, possible consequences.
That's an awful lot of thinking to have to go through just to use the restroom. It really is.
Yeah, no, you're just really in there to really, can you imagine like the times you've been like at a state fair or something? And it's like, listen, we're in and out. Like we're not trying to, you know, figure out the Pythagorean theorem while in the bathroom. We're in and out. Mm-mm. So the fact that you're adding this extra element, I'm just quiet because I'm listening and internalizing that, you know. Sometimes it's good to put yourself in other people's shoes.
We actually sponsored IT Equality, my company, sponsored the gender neutral bathrooms at Witness Success last year. And that was really interesting, not because we were sponsoring the bathrooms. The bathrooms were fine. There were a few mishaps, lessons learned, you know, note to self, rope off the urinals in what was the men's bathroom because that could cause confusion. But you know, besides the logistics, I was sitting down next to one of my friends, who's a very out transgender woman. And she told me, she said, you know, I hate the gender neutral bathrooms. And I was devastated because she's my friend. And I was just thinking to myself, like, but you're LGBT. Like, how could you not like gender neutral bathrooms? I thought everybody who's LGBT would just have to like them automatically. Like it's, you know, some kind of criteria. And so my little bubble of ignorance was completely popped. I was just floored that anybody that's LGBT wouldn't like gender neutral bathrooms. And I said, why? Like, why don't you like the gender neutral bathrooms? And she said, well, you know, if there's like a cute guy or something, I don't want him to be in the bathroom while I'm doing bathroom stuff, you know, whether it's putting on lipstick or... She's just like, you know, I work so hard on everything to be, you know, to be pretty and hair and makeup. And like, I just don't, she's like, I hate it.
That's a good point.
I was like, I had no idea. You know, I had no idea. I thought was amazing to me. But you live and learn.
And you know what? This is what we haven't really talked a whole lot about. Salesforce or even the Ohana on this episode, but you know, I'm incredibly grateful for Salesforce and all that they do for equality. I grew up being taught to, you know, to care for others, to love others, to treat people fair and equal, but not really being exposed to a lot of people that looked different than me. And so it's been great. Like the longer and deeper that I get into the Salesforce community, the more that I get to meet people with different backgrounds and cultures and experiences and preferences and beliefs. And I know like it was not my first Dreamforce, but Dreamforce several years ago, they started passing out the preferred pronoun pins, and they have the signs at their mm-hmm. restrooms, you know, for the, you know, to, it, you know, encouraging people to use whichever bathroom they feel, you know, they identify and they feel most comfortable with. And, you know, so, and then of course, you know, Tony Profit and all that he does and just the whole community, the way that people rally around each other to, you know, I mean, just hearing your viewpoints, Ashley, of the stories and the examples and, you know, things that maybe I've thought of a little bit, but things that I haven't thought of too. And so it's just great that, I don't know, like I appreciate you and I appreciate that Salesforce has even brought us together and makes this such a priority, you know, that they put this to light.
Yeah. It's been huge. When I first started IT Equality, I asked a lot of people that were older than me, hopefully wiser than me. You know, if I'm out of the closet, is that going to be bad for business? And unanimously, people said yes. They said yes. They're like, I had one person that said, if you're not a sex worker, nobody needs to know that you're lesbian.
Wow.
And wow. That was something. I still know her because, you know, we still see each other from time to time. But, you know, I had other people that said at the time before, when I was coming out of the closet, I had one person who looked at me and they said, well, you know, you don't look like a lesbian. You could really just, you know, not say anything. You know, I'm worried that if you come out as lesbian and, you know, you start talking about it, that people are going to discriminate against you. And so at first I thought, well, I want to be authentic, but I also want to be able to make a living. I need my company to be successful. I've got 3 kids and a mortgage in California. Like right. I've got bills to pay. So if being out of the closet is going to be bad for business, I'm not sure I want that. And then I saw Mary Scotton.
Love Mary.
Developer evangelist with Salesforce. Love her. She got on stage and she was like, hey, I'm Mary Scotton. I'm a lesbian. And we're going to talk about equality. And my jaw dropped and my heart stopped. I just thought to myself that there's somebody that works at Salesforce that just got on stage.
In leadership.
Yes, in leadership. Who just said, yep, this is my name. She's I'm fantastic. Lesbian. Let's do this. And
with no not, hesitation. Yeah,
not, yeah, no blink, that. No hesitation, nothing. And I just was... I think I cried. I was like, after that moment, like that was the moment where I made up my mind and I said, I'm going to be out. I'm going to be as out as I possibly can be. I'm going to be like neon flashing rainbows out, because her getting up on that stage was so inspirational to me to be authentic, that if I could ever do that for someone else, I could not pass up that chance, even if it was bad for business. And so from that day forward, I was completely out as a company, as, you know, myself. I'm actually certified through the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. That is a thing. I have an LGBT business certification. And so as a company, we have that certification with every customer that we work with. That certification is in our statement of work. It's on our website. Like, we are very abundantly, clearly an LGBT company.
And awesome.
I love Salesforce.
So side note, Mary Scotton is the guest on the podcast, the Two Wit podcast that was released this week.
Mm-hmm.
So plug for them. I'm actually headed to Southeast Dreamin' tomorrow, and it is already, the episode is downloaded onto my phone, so that's what I'll be listening to on the plane over there. So
meanwhile, so I'm over here trying to quote Ashley on a Twitter post.
Oh my goodness.
but side note, Ashley, I am not lesbian, but you still were that inspiration for me. So Justice almost always asks early on origin stories, like how we, you know, met, whenever it's somebody that I've invited onto the podcast. And I can't believe we are 49 and a half minutes into this conversation, and this is just now coming up. But that Ashley and I actually met through the Ohana Coffee that happens periodically, I guess once a month or so, a virtual coffee.
Shout out to Lauren for quarterbacking those. Continue, please.
Yes. Lauren Dunn puts those together, and it's fantastic, and there's limited space, but it sells out fast. There's one this Friday, too, if you're not signed up.
I'm signed up.
I'm going to try to pop in at Southeast Dreamin', so I don't know. I might pop in and say hi, then have to duck off, but we'll see. Anyway, but because of just hearing you and how open you are, not only with your sexuality, but also with your past, when I had issues the latter part of last year, and obviously it wasn't an isolated event, it had grown, but my teenage son has been struggling with depression and anxiety, and you know, and it just, it got really, really dark for him for a while. And, you know, this is my son, you know, I helped make him, he means a lot to me. And I'm watching him just hurt. And there's, I didn't know what to do. And Justice, I don't think I ever told you this, but I actually reached out to Ashley knowing that she had been through this and had come out on the other side. And although, you know, for a lot of people, depression is something you never get over, but obviously you're at least in a good place and able to function, which Logan wasn't at that point for a while this past year. And so Ashley was able to talk to me as someone who has lived through it. And I asked two questions. I said, what did someone in your life do that you're thankful for? And what do you wish someone had done? And, you know, because I want to be that for my son. So Ashley was incredibly helpful in talking to me and helping me to see his viewpoint as he was going through this thing that I just don't understand. I mean, I have down days, but I don't suffer with clinical, you know, depression like he does. And so I couldn't see through his eyes, but Ashley helped me a lot with that time.
I remember that. And I remember every time anybody asks me, you know, what's something that somebody did, the story that comes to mind, it's my, I think you choose your family. So my mom, by choice, her name's Emma, and she brought me a piece of chocolate while I was in the mental hospital. I was 14 and I had attempted suicide, and I was just at like rock bottom, and I felt like my parents had given up on me. They, you know, my mom would ask, well, why me? Why would you do this to me? Why would, you know, and it wasn't about her, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of like, are you okay? Like people in my life didn't really care about how I was doing, which is, you know, part of the contributing factors to why I was depressed in the first place. And Emma went and visited me and she brought me a piece of chocolate. And you're not allowed to have outside food or anything because of certain restrictions and whatnot. But like, she kind of smuggled in this piece of chocolate, and that was just the best act of kindness that anybody had really shown me up until that point. Just like, it seems like a simple piece of chocolate, but just like her bringing that in, it wasn't words. It wasn't a hug. It wasn't anything. It was just an act of kindness, just having something. And so I kept this piece of chocolate under my pillow and I hid it for the 3 to 5 days or so that I was there for that stay. And I just knew, like, holding on to that piece of chocolate, having like little tiny bits at night when no one was going to catch me between door checks because they open your door in the middle of the night. I just knew that somebody really, really loved me. And that meant the world to me. So that's the one thing that somebody did for me that really meant a lot. And then something that I wish somebody had done, I wish that the people in my life had stopped being angry at me for what I was doing and had just given me enough time to just feel what I was feeling and also to show me that they cared about how I was doing without making it about themselves. I think that was something I was really lacking, you know, beyond Emma.
Yeah, that's one of the hard things. And that's one of the things that we're still dealing with now is the waves of effects. So, you know, Logan's in a better mental place now, and but he's still dealing with, I guess, the fallout. You know, he's a senior in high school and he missed a bunch of school. And so, you know, he's really behind. And so, you know, he, in his darkest days, he pushed a lot of people away. And so, you know, you made your bed, now you got to lie in it. But at the same time, you know, he was dealing with an illness, mm-hmm. you know, and so, so it's hard because it's not just a matter of getting better, not just getting mentally healthier, but then you've dug yourself into this hole. So even while you're still fragile and, you know, mentally, you have to then deal with the consequences of this hole that you've dug for yourself. And it's easy to slip back into the, you know, being in that just dark place to do what you need to do to numb things so that you don't have to feel, you don't have to deal with the consequences. But then of course that only makes it worse, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely relate to that. I was hospitalized several times, throughout my freshman year of high school, and I did make up the homework and I played catch up with school, and, you know, I managed to get through it that way, but it is a lot. It's, you know, it's difficult when you're pulled away from school, but then you have to play catch up and there's so much else going on. And so I can relate to that. I really can.
No, that's very inspiring, Ashley. You know, one of the things that for me, you know, when I was in high school, you know, you kind of always had this kind of like, when I get to be this, you know, this age, I'll be successful, or this is what success will look like. And if I do all these right things, or if I stumble my way there, then, you know, I'll be fine. But nobody really tells you is just like waking up, navigating and maneuvering life in of itself is a challenge. And a lot of people keep things to themselves. And I mean, your level of openness will have immeasurable impact with anybody that decides to listen to this podcast. But it's inspiring, because for me, it's like one of those things of sometimes you get caught up in the whole narrative of everybody thinks everything is okay, so I'll continue to play into that and let them think that. But we've all gone through it. So I mean, you know, Stacey with her son and some of the things that she was challenged with. You know, I'm divorced with two kids, and you know that has subsequent effects to me and my life. And you know, there's a lot of things that we all. And it's not to just say, hey, let me step on a soapbox and have a pity party for me. But it's just one of those things that I think when you can demonstrate that you're real and people can clearly see you're doing well, you're a happy individual, meaning you specifically, Ashley, but you're still comfortable enough in your own skin to be open and say, this is what I've dealt with. It kind of, you position yourself as an exemplary leader. And then other people are saying, hey, you know what? Maybe it is okay that I dealt with depression, or it is okay that I went through some trauma in my high school years, or whatever that looks like. So I one of the things Stacey likes to do on some of the podcasts we've had is just kind of be like, oh, you know, Justice, this was my favorite episode for this or that. I'm the one that says nothing, but I will go ahead and shoot myself later for saying this has been one of my favorite conversations.
Wow.
Not to take anything away from anybody else.
Thank you.
Rachel, if you're listening, I know you will be. I love every one of our podcast guests, but no, this has definitely been one of my favorite. It's been therapeutic, to be honest with you. It's been therapeutic. It's been fulfilling. It's been enlightening.
Thank you.
So I appreciate you.
Yeah, definitely one of our deeper conversations that we've had, but I think it's been it's been good. And Ashley, I'm going to, you know, call Justice out. He's messaging me on the side and he's like, this is so good. Our listener, he's like, I'm loving this. Our listeners are going to get so much out of this. I mean, he just, you know, keeps talking about how good what you're saying is and how needed it is to be heard by many.
Well, thank you. Anytime that you want to talk LGBT, mental health, running a company, you know, like I really truly am an open book. Even beyond this podcast, like I run a group called Trailblazers with Anxiety. I took a bit of a hiatus recently, but I started a group called Trailblazers with Anxiety so that people could reach out. But I'm an open book, and I'm really interested in helping people in whatever way that can happen. Like I really do enjoy helping people, especially people who are living a similar past to what I've had, or people who, you know, were at-risk kids or have that kind of a background. Maybe they're in the closet, or they're, you know, things that I can relate to. I like to help out.
So that's Trailblazers with Anxiety. Is that on the Trailblazer community?
Yes, it's an unofficial group. It's not one of the official, you know, sanctioned groups with a leader and things like that. It's just one of the like off the books kind of group, mm-hmm. but it is in the Trailblazer community. So you can find it. I guess it's a chatter group in the Trailblazer community.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then aside from that, what are other ways that people can reach you? You're on Twitter, of course.
Oh, yeah. What's your handle? So I'm a nerd girl, NERRDGIRRL. So a nerd girl with two R's on Twitter. And then I think Twitter's pretty effective publicly. Mm-hmm. My email is posted on my company website. So I'm Ashley@itequality.com. That's public information. So yeah, I mean, if anybody ever wanted to reach out to me, I'd definitely be there to help as much as I can be. I mean, barring any crazy circumstance like conferences or things like that, you know.
Yeah, no, that's good. So I appreciate you sharing that. I also learned something new today. When Stacy is faced with something, she reaches out to you and not me. But I'm not going to make this about me, Stacy. No, I'm kidding.
I'm using my resources. Come on, PIC, you know.
Actually, I was actually going to bring this up, which we tend to be on the same wavelength, Stacy, so this is good. But I was going to ask, like, you know, the whole conversation today has been a very necessary one, but I was going to see, like, what has your sense of feeling in terms of support from the Salesforce community been that might have served as a catalyst, if you will, to maybe support the level of openness you're at? Because, I a lot of our followers and listeners obviously are in the Salesforce ecosystem. But one of the things that, Tony Proffitt is a mentor of mine. Mark Benioff is somebody that we all know if you touch Salesforce at all. And obviously he supports inclusivity and equality. Obviously he named Tony Proffitt as the chief equality officer, which was the first time they've done that in the company's history. And there's not a lot of positions like that for a lot of organizations that want to put their money behind their mouth and get behind that sort of initiative. So has the Salesforce community been a catalyst? I know you've kind of answered that in different spots, but just as a blanket statement, okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to a huge extent, huge extent. The first gender neutral bathroom I ever walked into was Dreamforce 2017. I never in a million years would have expected a gender neutral bathroom. And being non-binary even, it was still weird for me because I had never experienced it before. And so that was huge, you know, fast forward a couple years later and I'm sponsoring gender neutral bathrooms at, you know, a community event. And so there's little things like that, but also the first time I ever came out of the closet was at Dreamforce 2017 because everything was just so inclusive and Salesforce has a chief equality officer. I held hands with my now fiance for the first time at Dreamforce because I was so far from home that I wasn't afraid that I was going to have a looky-loo neighbor that was going to find out, you know, and also, because Salesforce is so inclusive, I felt like if I was holding hands with Miranda, people weren't going to give me dirty looks. I mean, I was in the middle of San Francisco, which is a very LGBT-friendly city. And so I really came out of the closet and held hands with my fiance for the first time at Dreamforce, which I never thought I would really come out at a technology conference. But Salesforce is just that good. And then continuing to be out as an LGBT company, and you know, I don't worry. You know, are Salesforce employees going to work with me, or are they going to, you know, avoid me because I'm like the rainbow partner? Or I don't worry about whether or not they're going to call me for you know, hey, I need help with XYZ. the only concerns I have are natural concerns that anybody would have of, you know, like, are they going to call me about Pardot? Maybe if I have Pardot experience, but, you know, like, I feel like I'm treated equal to anybody else that could run a company, you know, and that sense of equality is something that is huge to me, because if I didn't have that sense of equality, it would be more difficult for me to be out as a company. And the work that I do, like in the community and just those sorts of things, being out would be more difficult. So Salesforce has been hugely impactful to me personally, just letting me be my authentic self. And also the Ohana has been hugely impactful. I can't say enough good things about Melinda Smith. Like, I love her to the moon and back again.
Love Melinda.
I love her.
Love Melinda.
Like,
okay.
She, before I knew what Ohana was, she was just the best, like, depiction of Ohana ever, because we were coworkers and she was going to let me borrow a dress. And I told her, I was like, she wasn't just letting me borrow a dress. She was walking me to the bathroom so I could try it on and she could give me feedback. So let me clarify that. So as she was like, it felt like she was dragging me to the bathroom so I could try on this dress. It was a dress with like a slit and it had short sleeves. And I had never worn short sleeves in front of any coworker ever in my professional life. So for more than a decade, I had never worn short sleeves. And so I told her, I was like, okay, slow down. Like, stop. I've got to stop you. I said, I have scars. I have a lot of scars. And she just looked at me and she's like, everyone's got a past, and kept on going.
Yep.
And I was like, that just meant so much to me. Like, people like Melinda and Mary Scotton, as I said earlier, and just the entire sales force. Are they perfect? No, but they are so good that I don't feel like I'm at a disadvantage for being out and in Salesforce.
That's, you know what, that's amazing. And I'm glad you couldn't have answered that question any better. And it's just one of those things too, Ashley, like, I'm so glad you mentioned Melinda of all people. She's one of the people that like, out of the entire community, the thing is, it's one thing what you post on Twitter. It's another thing when you see people at the conference or community-like conferences like Midwest Dreaming. You get to know people, and it's very easy to be like, oh, yeah, this is what I do. This is where I'm at. Here's where we're at, whatever. But I've gotten a little bit closer with Melinda, and similarly with Stacy, where the closer I get with people, I kind of feel them out in terms of, like, you know, can I really be me? And not that there's just two justices out here. But I remember sharing something with Melinda that I thought was going to be kind of like a gasp kind of thing. And I just stopped, like, mm-hmm. because I stopped because in my mind, I put a pause, like there was supposed to now be a reactionary gasp. And she was like still staring at me mm-hmm. blankly, like wondering when the next part of the story was coming. And the point is she mm-hmm. There are people that will embrace you in a way that is kind of like, hey, I'm trying to embrace you because I'm putting on a front that I should be supportive. And then there are people that, like, their brain just isn't wired to think any differently than I'm looking at you for who you are, not for an experience or a scenario or a unfortunate, you know what I mean? And Melinda's one of those people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know exactly what I mean. Yeah, Melinda is the most authentic person I know. I mean, if I had a role model for authenticity, it would be Melinda.
She's got it all figured out. So I'm glad you brought that up. Well, that's good. That's good. You know, this has been, I feel like we could talk for another 6 hours, Stace. Easy.
We could just chant "I love Melinda" for another 6 hours. That'd be fun with that too.
What I'm doing right now is I'm stopping myself because I can already see my brain getting ready to go through like 15. You know what? I'm gonna do one more Melinda story. Where were we at? We were at New York, I think. This is where Shaquille from Pep Up got his golden hoodie. I think that was New York. Yeah, Stacey, you spoke there.
Yep. That was World Tour back in December.
Okay, so I was volunteering. Mary Scotton was there too, by the way. I was volunteering in like this trailhead zone, getting folks skilled up on setting up a trailhead profile, logging in, doing several badges, asking questions in their trailhead playground on how do I do this thing or do, you know, how do I activate my workflow, you know, that sort of thing. And we have a group chat, Ashley, the Gift Squad group chat, me, Stacy, several of us are in this group chat. And Melinda, so we coordinated based on who was in New York for this world tour, just so we could, you know, link up and catch up and things like that. So when we kind of did a pulse check for where everybody was at, I said, yeah, I'm in the trailhead zone. Melinda went into saying, well, have you eaten anything? I said, no. She said, okay, I'll bring you something. Like that type of stuff. You know what I mean? Like brought me like a muffin and this and that. And, you know, just, you just don't really come across people like that. Because the thing is Melinda knows me. She knows that if I'm in the middle of something, I will deprioritize like eating myself or not eating myself, but like eating breakfast or like my self-care is very bad when I got too many things going on. So Melinda knew that about me specifically and brought me a muffin. But I just love Melinda and I love the community and I love the fact that this conversation here has, you know, Stacy reached out and said, we got to interview Ashley. We went back and forth 15 different times because Ashley's traveling all across the globe. But, you know, we made it. And I couldn't be more grateful to be a part of this community and continually be inspired by individuals such as yourself, Ashley. So I appreciate you joining the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And this has been great.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. And yes, as Justice says, thank you for your patience when I know we had some scheduling issues, but this worked out great. And I really appreciate your time and looking forward to getting this episode published and letting others hear your story and our little love session on Melinda and and Salesforce, yes. And Mary. And this has been great. And let me just say to all of those who are listening that Justice and I love, love, love hearing your stories and we love sharing your stories. And so if you have an incredible story that you want to share, or if you know someone who does, please send us a message. Our Twitter handle is SF Campfire. And or message either Justice or I individually as well. So let us know who has a great story that you want to hear published on our future episodes.
And one thing I would say, just to piggyback on that really quick, mm-hmm. if you've listened to any of our episodes and you find great inspiration out of it, please share. When you listen to this episode, whether it's something that touches you specifically or you feel it could inspire somebody within your network or your community, please share. Just because you never know, who out there within your network or within your community is looking for inspiration at different points in their life. So the best thing you can do is share and be an advocate, a silent advocate or an intentional advocate, whatever makes sense for you. But yes, well said, Stacy.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, you guys. Y'all have a great evening.